So, in September of 2026, NVIDIA quietly wired $12.93 billion to buy a company called Hugging Face.
Yeah, just an absolutely massive number.
Right. And with that single wire transfer, they didn't just buy like a tech startup. They essentially bought the entire destination city of the AI world.
Exactly.
Welcome to the deep dive, by the way. Today, our mission is to unpack a really detailed, brand new piece of source material we have, the Tekken Guide, The Great Escape from the CUDA Lock-In.
It's a great read. Really eye-opening.
It really is. And if you're listening to this, we are going to shortcut you to being the single most well-informed person in the room regarding the just massive paradigm shift happening right now in AI infrastructure.
Yeah, because the plumbing of the entire tech sector is basically being ripped out and rewired as we speak. I mean, if you aren't deeply entrenched in this space, Hugging Face isn't just some random company.
Right.
It is the open source epicenter. We're talking over 3 million models, 18 million active engineers. It's the digital town square where all generative computing happens today.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because this acquisition wasn't just a big tech purchase. According to the Tekken Guide, this specific buyout was the catalyst for a full-scale corporate rebellion. Like, this was the moment the industry finally realized they were completely trapped.
Trapped is definitely the right word. Because with Hugging Face under its umbrella, NVIDIA achieved something that's honestly terrifying for its competitors. They got absolute, total vertical integration.
Yeah, they basically own the entire stack now.
Exactly. They now control the whole generative AI value chain. We are talking sovereignty over the physical TSMC advanced packaging wafers, the Blackwell server clusters.
The hardware itself.
Right. The physical hardware. Plus the proprietary InfiniBand networking fabrics, the CUDA software runtime drivers, and now the open source weights and distribution channels themselves.
So they own the hardware, they own the software, and now they own the store. But, okay, let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Didn't NVIDIA earn this monopoly fairly? I mean, Wall Street heavily criticized Jensen Huang, their CEO, way back in 2006 for investing heavily in scientific computing on what were basically just consumer video game graphics cards.
Right. The gaming GPUs.
Yeah. Weren't they just like decades ahead of the curve?
I mean, yes. Was it brilliant strategic foresight? Absolutely. Seeding universities worldwide with free hardware and conditioning an entire generation of researchers to equate parallel computing with CUDA. Also brilliant.
It paid off.
Big time. It led directly to the AlexNet breakthrough in 2012 and positioned them perfectly for the Transformer Revolution in 2017. But there is a massive difference between earning a first mover advantage and actively throttling your own customers.
That is fair.
And that is where the strategy morphed into what the guide bluntly calls hardware extortion.
Wow, hardware extortion. And the numbers in the guide really back that up. I mean, NVIDIA pulling in 85% gross margins.
Just unheard of margins for hardware.
Right. And cloud providers literally begging to be put on 9-month waiting queues just to get servers. But the detail that genuinely blew my mind, the artificial networking throttling.
Oh, the NVLink stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. Like if an enterprise tried to pair NVIDIA GPUs with standard industry normal Ethernet, instead of NVIDIA's proprietary NVLink switches, they were hit with a 60% throughput penalty.
It's basically a punishment for not buying their gear.
Exactly. And those proprietary switches, $400,000 per rack.
Yeah, that's not innovation anymore. That is a tax on the entire industry. And the Hugging Face acquisition was really the breaking point. What's fascinating here is how quickly the ecosystem began to shift post-buyout.
Even though the executives promised neutrality, right?
Oh, of course they promised neutrality. Yeah. But suddenly, the discovery algorithms on the model hub subtly began prioritizing checkpoints that were pre-calibrated for NVIDIA workstations.
Just a little algorithmic nudge.
Right. And automated translation scripts that targeted competing compilers, those were suddenly getting deprioritized.
It is exactly like a company that owns a toll road. Mm. For years, you paid their toll because the destination city at the end of the road was this vibrant, open place. But now, they just bought the destination city.
That is a great way to put it.
The message to CPOs is crystal clear, you know?
Yeah.
You pay our toll or you face operational obsolescence.
Which is exactly why the Fortune 500 infrastructure teams finally mobilized. Escaping CDO went from this fun fringe academic research project to the single most urgent operational imperative across the whole tech sector.
But actually, leaving NVIDIA has historically been a literal nightmare for developers.
Oh, total nightmare.
Because it wasn't just about swapping out a physical chip. The software was acting like this gilded cage.
Precisely. And it comes down to the micro-architectural mechanics of how NVIDIA GPUs actually function. They operate on a design called SIMT single instruction, multiple threads.
Okay.
And these threads are rigidly grouped into clusters of 32, which NVIDIA calls warps.
Warps.
Yeah. So to get any kind of peak performance out of the chip, senior engineers couldn't just, you know, write simple math. They had to hand-tune complex assembly code to explicitly manage how those warps shared memory and schedule tasks.
So they didn't get hit with brutal latency penalties.
Yep. Exactly.
So the pure mathematical logic of your AI model was deeply, almost like biologically entangled with the physical silicon registers of that specific NVIDIA chip.
Yes.
And if you wanted to move to a completely different chip made by someone else, you're looking at manual line-by-line rewrites in low-level C++ math.
Months of delays, just a massive drain on engineering resources. And you'd usually end up with a final product that was full of unpredictable bugs anyway.
Right.
But that barrier is finally breaking. The guide outlines what it calls the compiler revolution. The software stack has finally decoupled from the silicon.
And the heroes of this escape, according to the source, are OpenAI Triton, OpenXLA, and PyTorch 2.6.
Right.
The source material gives a fantastic code teardown here that really makes this real. They use the example of an attention kernel, which is basically the core mathematical operation that lets an AI know which words to focus on in a sentence.
Yeah, the heavy lifting.
Exactly. In raw CUDA C++ same code, writing that kernel takes over 800 lines of incredibly complex, dangerous code. You are juggling pointer arithmetic, explicit thread synchronization. It's just a mess.
Yeah, it really is.
But in Triton, you write that exact same operation in just a few lines of clean, hardware-agnostic Python.
And Triton essentially acts as an optimizing compiler. You just write your mathematical blocks in Python, and Triton automatically handles all that low-level memory scheduling and architecture-specific code generation behind the scenes.
So it basically acts like a universal translator.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Developers can just speak in plain mathematical Python, and the compiler instantly translates it into the optimal, hyper-specific dialect for whatever physical chip you happen to be using. It eliminates vendor lock-in entirely.
That's a perfect way to visualize it. And OpenXLA actually takes it a step further by automating a concept called operator fusion.
Okay. How does that work?
Well, think of how a CPU usually works. It's like baking a cake where you go to the fridge, get one egg, walk to the bowl, crack it, walk back to the fridge for the milk, walk back to the bowl.
That sounds exhausting.
It is. And it wastes a massive amount of time just reading and writing to the memory pool over and over again. OpenXLA digests your entire computational plan in advance and fuses those operations into a single execution pass. You basically take everything out of the fridge at once.
Eliminating all those redundant memory cycles that used to cripple non-NVIDIA hardware.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. The guide also heavily praises VLLM and its page attention innovation. Because, as I understand it, memory saturation used to crash alternative chips constantly.
Constantly, yeah.
But page attention handles memory entirely differently. It's basically acting like a really efficient restaurant host, right?
I like that. Go with that. How so?
Well, instead of reserving a massive 10-person table for a group that might only end up being two people, which just leaves a bunch of empty space that no one else can use.
Right, which is huge memory waste.
Yeah. Paged attention breaks the AI's memory down into individual seats. It fills them dynamically, block by block, meaning absolutely zero memory is left empty.
Yeah.
And that allows these alternative chips to hit 98% memory saturation without crashing.
That is spot on. It eliminates fragmentation entirely. This raises an important question, though. What happens to the value of a company's proprietary hardware when the software layer acts as a universal translator and perfectly optimizes memory on literally any chip?
The hardware just becomes hardware again. It's a utility.
Exactly.
Which naturally brings us to the physical chips themselves. Now that the software barrier is obliterated, we have three heavyweights stepping into the ring to replace the NVIDIA B200 and H100 clusters. The guide calls them the ASIC Silicon Triumvirate: Google Trillium, AWS Trainium 3, and Groq LPUs. And just for you listening, ASICs are application-specific integrated circuits. So unlike GPUs, which were originally built to render video game graphics, ASICs are chips built to do exactly one job perfectly.
Right. Let's start with the heavy lifters first, the training giants. So Google Trillium, which is their TPU V6. The engineering inside Trillium relies on something called systolic arrays.
Systolic arrays.
Yeah. To understand a systolic array, imagine a bucket brigade at a fire.
Okay.
Instead of each compute core running back and forth to the main memory pool to fetch data, which, by the way, costs massive amounts of energy, the data is pumped rhythmically through a grid of cores, step by step, in this continuous flow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that architectural choice delivers a 4.7 times increase in compute performance per watt. It absolutely dominates megascale foundation model training, bringing costs down to fractions of a cent per million tokens. I think it's like 55 to 85 cents.
That is wild. And right beside them is AWS Trainium 3. That one is built on TSMC's cutting-edge 3-nanometer node. And it is slashing AWS cloud footprint training costs by nearly 50% compared to NVIDIA B200s.
Which is huge for enterprise.
Right. Like, if you were a company already deeply embedded in the AWS ecosystem, it's basically a no-brainer to switch.
Totally.
But the hardware that genuinely stops you in your tracks in this guide is the inference reticle, the Groq LPU, or language processing unit.
Groq is just a massive philosophical rejection of how we build computers today. I mean, standard GPUs are severely bottlenecked by external DRAM memory.
Right.
When an AI generates text token by token, a process we call sequential autoregressive inference, the compute cores are so incredibly fast that they spend most of their time just idling.
Because they're waiting for data.
Exactly. Yeah. They literally sit there waiting for the next word's weights to be fetched across the external memory bus. Groq looked at that and said, what if we just tear out the external memory entirely?
Wait, how does a chip even function with no external memory? That sounds impossible.
Well, they do it by replacing it with 230 megabytes of ultra-fast RAM baked directly onto the silicon die itself.
Oh.
Because the memory physically lives on the compute chip, the bandwidth is staggering. We are talking 80 terabytes per second. Plus, they eliminated something called speculative branch logic.
What is that?
So standard chips waste huge amounts of thermal energy trying to guess multiple future paths of logic and then throwing away the wrong guesses. Groq doesn't guess. It is entirely deterministic. The compiler maps the exact flow of data before execution even begins.
And the performance numbers in the guide are just wild.
Yeah.
Sub 5 millisecond time to first token, sustained throughput exceeding 550 tokens per second, plus a 65% reduction in wasted thermal energy.
Yeah.
But wait, let me push back and stop you right there for a second. If Groq is clocking 550 tokens a second by ripping out external memory, why isn't every single company on Earth just using Groq for everything?
That's a great question, and it has because of the memory limit. 230 megabytes of RAM is incredibly fast, yes, but it is incredibly small. This highlights the new bifurcation of AI compute. You have to match the silicon to the workload. When you are pre-training a massive foundation model from scratch, you are wrangling trillions of data points. You need the massive memory pools of Google Trillium or AWS Trainium.
Right, the bucket brigade.
Exactly. Groq cannot train models. It is exclusively for ultra-fast, real-time inference. Think live voice synthesis or autonomous AI agents that need to chain together hundreds of internal reasoning steps in milliseconds before they execute a tool call.
Okay, that clarifies things immensely. So Trillium and Trainium build the brain, and Groq lets the brain think in real time.
That is a great summary.
But, you know, having all these incredible chips is completely useless if your enterprise code base is permanently glued to NVIDIA, if you're a CTO staring at these cheaper, faster chips. How do you actually physically untangle your company's logic from COD without breaking your live product?
It's scary.
The guide lays out a four-phase playbook, and just reading it, you can almost feel the developer anxiety.
It is a high-wire act for sure, but it's highly structured. So phase one is the code base audit. This is where the engineering team runs automated static linters to hunt down every hidden proprietary dependency. Every hard-coded .cuda assignment buried deep in the legacy code has to be found and abstracted out.
And once you find them, phase two is graph porting. This is where Triton and OpenXLA come to the rescue, digesting the mathematical bottlenecks and translating them into those hardware-agnostic formats. You basically finally break the CEDA chains here.
Then comes phase three, which is just pure paranoia, rigorous numerical validation.
Oh, man.
You run the newly refactored model in a shadow sandbox, feeding it the exact same data as the old NVIDIA model and mathematically verifying the outputs to ensure zero numerical drift. You basically have to prove the new chips aren't hallucinating different answers.
That sounds intense. Finally, there's phase four. multi-cloud canary deployment using OCI containers. You gradually route tiny fractions of live user traffic to the new silicon clusters, and you're just watching the telemetry screens like a hawk to ensure sub-second latency and stability before you open the floodgates.
It is an intense migration sprint. I mean, nobody wants to do it, but consider the alternative. Imagine you are a CFO signing off on these server bills. The total cost of ownership revelation here is undeniable.
Give me the numbers.
Okay. Serving a standard 70 billion parameter model on a traditional NVIDIA B200 cluster costs $78,000 every single month.
Wow.
That exact same workload migrated to a hybrid cluster using Google TPU for heavy lifting and Grok for fast inference costs $29,500 a month.
That is a 62% reduction in infrastructure overhead. Just gone.
Yes. And peak traffic latency drops from 85 milliseconds down to just 12.
That's incredible. And the kicker. The guide says the one-time engineering cost to actually execute that stressful four-phase migration sprint is estimated at around $35,000.
Right. That means the entire engineering effort pays for itself in under 45 days. I mean, if you're an engineering leader listening to this, how do you balance the immediate pain of retraining your team against those massive cost savings?
You can't ignore it. For an enterprise processing hundreds of millions of user queries, staying tethered to NVIDIA's hardware margins is borderline fiscal malpractice at this point.
Right.
But as a rigorous engineering guide, it does maintain intellectual honesty.
Mm-hmm.
There are technical caveats. There are specific scenarios where enterprises absolutely must stay on NVIDIA right now.
Right. It's not a magic wand that fixes everything. Where does the new software fall short?
Profiling and systems observability. NVIDIA has had, you know, 2 decades to perfect their developer tooling. The NVIDIA Insight Profiling Suite is still the absolute gold standard for microsecond level debugging.
Ah, okay.
If you have hyper-exotic kernel stalls buried deep in your system, the tools provided by Google and AWS are honestly still playing catch-up in terms of granular visibility. The guide also points out some mathematical blind spots, too. Like, if your enterprise relies on extremely exotic, sub-byte quantization-like bespoke FP4 weight formats, which is essentially this dark art of squeezing massive data numbers into ultra-tiny 4-bit memory spaces, alternative chips really struggle.
They do.
And the same goes for dynamically sized sparse matrices.
Exactly right. And a sparse matrix is basically a massive mathematical grid that is mostly filled with empty zeros. And dynamically sized just means it constantly changes shape on the fly.
Unpredictable.
Highly unpredictable. Because chips like Grok rely on perfectly deterministic, rigidly scheduled data routing that has to be mapped out before execution, highly irregular mathematical shapes require massive graph restructuring to process efficiently. NVIDIA's legacy architecture just handles that chaos much better.
So the pragmatic advice for CTOs is migrate your standardized high-volume production pipelines first. Things like your customer service agents or document extraction tools. Secure those 62% cost savings immediately. But keep a handful of legacy NVIDIA instances running for your exploratory R&D and prototyping teams until your engineers fully master the quirks of the new compiler tool chains.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this transition extends far beyond optimizing a single Fortune 500 company's ledger. We're witnessing the birth of what the guide calls the liquid compute architecture.
Liquid compute. So the goal isn't just to escape NVIDIA only to get locked into Google Cloud or AWS. The goal is a completely decoupled multi-cloud deployment fabric.
Exactly.
Using open source orchestration layers like Raycore and Kubernetes, you can abstract the hardware entirely. Your software scheduler dynamically routes workloads across heterogeneous silicon across the globe based on live spot pricing and even the local power grid's carbon intensity.
Massive batch pre-training gets sent to Google TPUs. High-throughput user chat sessions get dynamically routed to Grok. Steady-state background processing goes to AWS Trainium. The software fluidly targets the most efficient silicon on Earth minute by minute.
So what does this all mean?
It means the definitive end of proprietary hegemony. The Hugging Face buyout really backfired by forcing the entire industry to collaborate. We are now seeing the rise of the UXL Foundation, the Unified Acceleration Consortium.
Right. That Google, Amazon, Intel, Qualcomm, Samsung, ARM.
Yep. They have all united to codify open, vendor-agnostic computing standards.
It's exactly what happened when the personal computing industry outgrew the monolithic mainframe monopolies of the past. Escaping CD isn't just some clever accounting trick to save on cloud bills. It is a declaration of technological sovereignty.
Absolutely.
It ensures that the future of artificial intelligence isn't gated by a single corporate toll booth with inflated margins.
The hardware layer is officially appoditized, and that liberates the software layer. engineers can finally focus on actual algorithmic breakthroughs instead of wrestling with proprietary silicon registers.
It really leaves you with a profound implication, you know. If compute power becomes this commoditized, this aggressively cheap, and completely immune to geopolitical supply chain choke points, could we see the rise of highly localized sovereign AI models?
It's fascinating to think about.
Imagine individual cities, municipalities, or smaller developing nations running entirely independent, heavily localized AI infrastructure, completely detached from the global tech giants in their walled gardens, building models on their own terms, on whatever cheap silicon they want, trained purely on their own cultural data.
It is a very real possibility now that the monopoly's lock-in is officially broken.
NVIDIA tried to buy the destination city, but all it did was force everyone to finally build new, better roads. Something to chew on as you go about your day. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the great escape from CUB. We will see you next time.